Case number 20-1580, Autumn Smith v. David Walters et al. Oral arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Samuel T. Field for the appellant.
Counsel?
May it please the court, I'm Samuel Field. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Autumn Smith. I want to begin my argument by...
Let me ask you whether you're going to be asking for rebuttal time.
3 minutes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I'd like to begin my argument by bringing to the court's attention two decisions of the Michigan courts. One is People versus Weinberg, which is a 1967 opinion of the Michigan Court of Appeals. The other is People versus Johnson, which is an 1898 decision of the Michigan Supreme Court. The significance of these two cases is that they lay out the distinction between disturbing the peace and breaching the peace. The two expressions sound similar, perhaps to a layperson, but to a lawyer, they mean fundamentally different things in the state of Michigan. A disturbance of the peace is an interruption of peace and quiet, a violation of public order, or the interference with or hindrance of a person's lawful pursuit of his occupation or rights. A breach of the peace is fundamentally different. It requires violence or an incitement to violence, which is greatly different than a disturbance. Violence is required. Now, the reason this distinction is so important in this case is because of the Michigan Open Meetings Act. We have a law in Michigan that says if a public body convenes a public meeting, citizens have a right to attend that meeting, and they may only be removed from the meeting for a breach of the peace. They must act in a violent way or act to incite violence. That's the only reason to eject them from the meeting.
What if they're screaming and yelling?
Well, the presider of the meeting clearly has a right, just as you do, Your Honor, to tell me to be still at any moment.
They don't, in my hypothetical.
Well, violence... an incitement to violence would occur at the point at which you would have a bailiff remove the person from the courtroom.
So he could scream and yell, and as long as... Oh, he could be removed now? I thought he couldn't be removed unless he was violent.
Once you instruct a bailiff to approach that individual, for example, in a courtroom, of course, they're guilty. I would be guilty of contempt of court if I was screaming in court. But to remove...
I'm not understanding your distinction then. I thought it had to be violent.
There has to be violence to remove the person from the courtroom, or not from the courtroom.
So what if he's in the room and doesn't leave and yells and screams on and on and on, stops very peacefully, nonviolently yelling and screaming?
The removal comes at the point where violence becomes involved under Michigan law.
So you could remove him in that situation.
Has to be violence or an incitement.
In Judge Rogers' hypothetical, are you saying that if the person continued screaming and yelling, that they could be removed, but they would be removed for disturbance of the peace rather than breach of the peace? Or what are you saying?
No, under Michigan law, there has to be a breach of the peace, and Michigan law is clear, there has to be violence or an incitement to violence. Now, I submit that if you reach a point where you're having a bailiff, for example, in your courtroom, go to silence me, then that's violence.
That's violence by the bailiff. It's not violence by the nonviolent yeller.
But there's violence involved in the end. That's an incitement.
Well, so I guess I don't understand them. It's okay to take somebody and escort them out of the room, even if they have not themselves been violent?
I'm sorry, would you say it again? I didn't hear you.
It's okay for the person presiding to say, bailiff, remove this person because he won't be quiet.
No, the presider in Michigan at a public meeting can tell the security official to make them be quiet. And at that point, now you've got violence and then they can be removed.
No, I don't understand that. I guess you say now there's violence by the bailiff, but you're not saying there's violence by the person who continues yelling. Just sort of incoherent to me that would be the law.
Well, I guess the analogy I would make as a parent is if you tell your child to go to their room, There's no violence. But at some point, there is a threat of violence that if you don't go to your room, I'm going to use physical force.
No, you won't get any cereal tomorrow. There's all kinds of things you could do.
That's correct. And there's no violence.
Bill, you seem to be arguing as to whether or not the mayor had grounds to order your client to leave the meeting. But I think the issue before us is whether the officers had probable cause to arrest her after she came back into the room for disturbance of the peace.
Well, I'm
not sure why it's relevant. How is it relevant whether or not the mayor had a basis to order her from the room when that's not really what's at issue here? What's at issue is whether the officers had probable cause.
I agree with you. I'd like to get to that. So you have
the mission. Let's focus on that issue because I think that's before us.
I'm trying to. So when you analyze this situation, and let me just say that, ironically, with regard to the Michigan Open Meetings Act, the trial court, in its 16-page opinion, never refers to the statute, even though I referred to it 8 times in my complaint. The word open isn't even in the opinion. So it's not there. It was never addressed by the trial court. But now let's go to your question, Your Honor. In order for there to be probable cause, there has to be a crime that's being alleged. And we all learned our first year of law school, first week of criminal law, you have to have a crime, you have to have actus reus and mens rea. You have to have actus reus, which is a deed that could possibly be criminal. So you look at this case and there are 5 possible actus reus, 5 possible deeds. And I'm not characterizing them, the trial court did. The first was when my client asked for permission to speak, raised her hand, was recognized, and she said something the judge or the mayor didn't like, which was basically she accused the chief of police of framing her in this prior complaint. That deed cannot be a crime. And in fact, the prosecuting attorney who issued the charges said, no, that wasn't criminal. That can't be criminal. The second event was, there was a second moment of public comment. My client raised her hand, asked permission to speak, was recognized. There was no disorder. And she said, well, actually, I should have said that the person who framed me was the evidence tech for the city. Again, can't possibly be a crime. She's expressing her freedom of speech as well as public redress under the First Amendment of the Constitution. In fact, the prosecuting attorney who handled the case said that can't be a crime. The third event was after the mayor told her to leave, which she obeyed, she came back into the chamber of the city commission. Now, that can't be a crime under the Michigan Open Meetings Act because there was never any violence. There was never any incitement to violence. She had a legal right under the law of the state of Michigan to be in that room. That can't be a crime. The fourth event that the trial court, in the trial court's opinion, is she went up to State Judge Halsey and she whispered in his ear, would you please sign my attendance form for my community service? That did not disturb the meeting. If you view the video, it's something that occurs every day in a courtroom, for example, where a clerk comes in and whispers to somebody, the meeting wasn't bothered. That can't be a crime. Then we get to the fifth event, which is when the police approach her. Now, the police didn't approach her for disturbing the meeting. They approached her because the mayor told them, he made a hand gesture, get her out of here. I mean, he didn't say get her out of here. He made a hand gesture, which indicated get her out of here. They came over to her and grabbed her and she said, don't touch me. That definitely disturbed the meeting. No question about it. For 18 seconds, the meeting was disturbed. But I submit that cannot be a criminal act on her part because the law is clear that, I believe it's the Ferguson case, it makes it clear that the disturbance can't be initiated by the police, which is what happened here. So those 5 acts, none of them can possibly be criminal, which is why there was no probable cause. Now, in the underlying
case, with respect to the fifth one, obviously.
What's that?
The argument is with respect to the fifth one, because the evidence that the person who who made the decision that there was probable cause to prosecute, which is what we're talking about. What was her name? Easterday or something like that?
Easterday, Angela Easterday, yes, sir.
So that person's making a decision. At first, asked for more information before she thought it was sufficient, but then got some more information. And that information was from other people in the room who were disturbed in some sense. So we're really basically down to the fifth one. And I'm just having trouble understanding your theory when you say that having a presider tell someone to be quiet or to leave, and then the sergeant at arms or the policeman or whatever undertakes that, and then there's resistance, that's violence for purposes of disturbance of the peace.
No. Wait.
That's why I'm confused.
You're confusing two points in my mind.
Yeah.
Okay. The disturbing of the peace charge doesn't require violence. So there's no issue about that.
So why isn't there probable cause that she should, in her actions, in creating a fuss or a hubbub which disturbed the meeting, rather than going out? I mean, it's the causing of the fuss and the hubbub that disturbs the meeting that is the arguable probable cause for this misdemeanor.
You're talking about the fifth event.
Yeah, the rest of it, I just don't see that's what
she wasn't. She wasn't causing a hubbub. She was whispering to somebody.
She was whispering, but when she said, "Get your hands off me," there's at least some evidence that this person took into account in deciding there was probable cause that she did more than whisper.
Well, she did more than whisper after the police grabbed her.
Didn't get convicted.
So you're saying that she has no responsibility for what occurred because she was unlawfully ejected from the meeting. She came back on her own.
She had a right to come back.
And because the interaction between her and the police was initiated by the police, that can't be the basis of a disturbance charge.
Correct.
And what case do you have to say that for that principle?
People v. O'Keefe, 218 Mish, number one. What the case says is, quote, where the only disturbance is created by law enforcement seeking to enforce section 750.170, there exists no probable cause for the crime to have been committed. She didn't do anything until the police approached her. And under People versus Ferguson, that cannot be a crime.
And you don't think that it's relevant, the things that she said from the podium, that can't be taken into account as part of the mix of things in determining whether she disturbed the peace?
Absolutely not. With all due respect, Your Honor, over the last 40 years, I've said things that judges have not liked and told me to be quiet. And when I was quiet, I was not in contempt of court. And that's what she did. If you watch the tape, he banged his gavel and she stopped talking. There can't possibly be any criminality in what she did.
And you don't think the police could have taken that into account when they were going over to see her, what she had said before, what she had done before in the room?
No, if you watch the tape, you'll see she comes back in the room and she's talking to the state judge, John Halsey. And the police just sit there and they're looking at the mayor. They don't do anything until you see the mayor make a hand gesture. That one of the exhibits attached to my brief is the screenshot of his hand gesture. Once he makes that hand gesture, that's when they go over. And the mayor, and this is why I sued him, he instigated this whole thing. I see I'm out of time. I'll be happy to answer any questions, but I don't want to.
Well, I want you to finish answering Judge Bush's question. Judge Bush, has he answered your question?
I'd like you to finish whatever else you want today.
Thank you.
Well, geez, that big red zero made me lose my train of thought. I'm sorry. She had a right to come back in the room. The whole thing was instigated by the mayor. I mean, if he had done nothing, she would have finished talking to Judge Halsey and left.
I guess what I'm having difficulty with is that I've seen the videotape of what she said at the mic. I understand that she can't be prosecuted for what she says at the mic, but doesn't the fact that she was, you know, going at the mayor Why can't that be taken into account in determining whether what she was up to in the back was to, you know, cause a disturbance in the room?
Because she had a constitutional right under the First Amendment of the United States of America to seek redress of her government. And that's what those statements were, and nothing more. He didn't like it, of course. That's his right. But I mean, she raised her hand. She waited for permission to speak. She said something he didn't like. He told her to stop talking. She stopped talking. But all of her statements were constitutionally protected.
Okay, thank you.
Judge Rogers, are there any further questions for counsel?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Is it Baber? Okay, unmute, sir.
Can you hear me now, Judge?
I can.
Perfect, yes, you pronounced my name correctly, thank you. If it pleases the court, Jonathan Baber on behalf of the appellees, David Walters and Kim Tolles. Respectfully, Your Honors, we disagree with the appellant's arguments in this appeal to such an extent that we have requested sanctions pursuant to Federal Rule of Appellate Procedure 38 and 28 U.S.C. 1927. There are fundamental weaknesses with the appellant's case, and there should be no reasonable expectation of overturning the District Court Judge Maloney's ruling, who ruled in favor of the appellees on four separate bases. First, the judge did an independent evaluation of the facts, evidence, watched the video, and determined that there was probable cause to charge the appellant under MCL 750.170. Then the judge pointed out in his opinion that the appellant, Ms. Smith, was ruled out of order twice lawfully by Mayor David Walters during the meeting, and under Leonard v. Robinson, officers seeing somebody being ruled out of order for violating a rule, that's enough to establish probable cause alone. Forget everything else, just that alone, that's probable cause as well. And the judge pointed that out.
Probable cause that she
created a disturbance of immediate.
Okay, but would create a disturbance because the other two events had already concluded. I mean, he ruled out of order, she stopped talking. So now she enters the courtroom and she doesn't enter yelling. So tell me what your strongest argument is for your suggestion that those earlier events were enough for them to find the basis of probable cause upon her reentry.
Well, I think it adds to sort of the state of mind of what the appellant was in when she reentered. So we had the events that took place earlier where she's at the podium. Now, when she's at the podium, there's rules in place. You can't slander anybody while up there. So she gets up there and she says, Chief Blocker assaulted me. Now, there was already a trial court case that went on. The jury said, we don't believe you, Ms. Smith. He didn't assault you. So she says that the first time, it's slander. She's out of order. Then she gets back up, essentially repeats it again, but adds another element of slander and says that, oh, and by the way, Inspector Weiss, he destroyed evidence that showed this assault taking place. That was argued in the trial court as well. In fact, 8 pages of the closing argument was dedicated to that notion. The jury didn't believe that either.
But that's not the basis for the criminal charge, is it?
It could have been.
But
it could have been alone.
But was it?
But in this instance, no. Easterday did not take that into account. But Judge Maloney pointed this out, that if we're looking for probable cause under Leonard versus Robinson, disturbance of a meeting by slander in this sort of sense and being ruled out of order, that could be probable cause. Now,
I'm a little confused by that point and what your opposing counsel was arguing, which is somehow that violence was needed to be ejected from the meeting. Are you saying that, or do you, first of all, do you agree with that violence was needed on the part of Ms. Smith in order for her to be ordered out of the meeting?
No, I do not. And I'm glad that question's raised. Ultimately, under the Open Meetings Act, someone could be evicted from a meeting for breach of the peace. Now, the Open Meetings Act does not define the term breach of peace. So we have to go back, and this court could look at the Black Law's Dictionary version of breach of peace, or as opposing counsel has pointed out, you can go to case law. Now, opposing counsel points out People versus Johnson for his definition that needs violence. This is an 1892 case, and understandably, in the past 130 years, it's been added upon with that definition. It's not saying that People versus Johnson's bad law anymore, but courts have actually added on to what the definition is. If we look at Dearborn Heights versus Bellick, which is 17 Mish App 163, this is a 1969 case. Ultimately, they made a definition of breach of the peace as any intentional violation of natural right of all persons in a political society to the tranquility enjoyment by citizens of a community where good order reigns among its members. And then if we get to 1999, there is a case in Ray Gosnell, 234 Mish App 326. It referenced both the Dearborn Heights case and that 1892 People versus Johnson in its opinion. So really, violence is not necessary. If someone's in an open meeting, counsel, disturbing the well-being,
counsel,
you may judge.
Thank you. If I understand violence is a breach of peace and something else less than violence might be breach of peace, but violating a point of order hardly seems to me to be a breach of peace. Do you have case law which says that, you know, speaking out of turn, for instance, can get you evicted or ejected under the Open Meetings Act? What would be your best
case? It happened.
Or do you say that's...
Well, I would say there's two cases. Even Leonard V. Robinson, if we look at the facts of that case, ultimately the speaker was ruled out of order for talking off topic and then ultimately was arrested and charged in that case. And then there's another case.
Is that right?
I believe it was talking off topic was the basis of the arrest and the eviction in that case. And there's another case that originally stemmed out of, if you give me a second here, Judge. I believe it stemmed out of
the Open Meetings Act says a breach of the peace is enough to lose your right to stay in the meeting.
That's what the Open Meetings Act.
If I read these cases, they say that that definition is met by speaking out of order.
Ultimately, I don't know if they necessarily cite to the open
qualification. I'm trying to get at what the law is that supports probable cause.
And I'm with you on that, and I'm trying to get to that point too, Judge Rogers. We could also look at Hartman versus Thompson. I'll say 931 F3D 471. Now, this is a case that's out of Kentucky.
That's not a case that you've cited, right?
It's not cited in the appellate brief, but it has been cited in reply briefs, and it's part of the record that should have come up through the court. So it's been cited by us before, but in the district court.
You didn't.
I did not, Judge Rogers. No, but that is a case that shows that individuals standing up in unison during a meeting, that was enough to eject them and finding a disturbance.
That was Kentucky law, not Michigan law.
Okay.
It was a Kentucky law case, correct, but it was seen in the Sixth Circuit as being a disturbance of a meeting. So what I'm getting at is,
but that's not out of order. When people do that, you don't say, well, you can say you're out of order. But it strikes me that it's hard to say that having some sentences that are off topic is out of order.
Right. But it doesn't make sense either that we wait for a speaker to start swinging on other people's before we can eject them for a meeting. Otherwise, we'd have no civility in regards to our meetings.
That may be. But then you've got this statute which seems to say that, which they raise and you don't cite. So that's what I'm concerned about.
Understood.
They say they have a statute of the state in which we're talking about, which is the Open Meetings Act, which says you can't be ejected unless there's, what's the language in the statute?
Breach of the peace.
Unless there's a breach of the peace.
Breach of the peace, okay. I can see people standing up in unison as breaching the peace. It's hard for me to say speaking out of turn is breach of the peace or even slam.
Well, exactly. But if you take it in the totality.
So how do you deal with that one particular issue? They have a right to be there, he says, and it can't be enforced. A right to eject can't be enforced when there's no breach of the peace. That's what he says is the law in Michigan.
That is correct. But the breach of the peace is not just violence. As I've pointed out other cases, it's something less than. So what we have here is we have meeting rules that say you cannot commit slander.
Okay.
So and if you commit slander,
I'm kind of surprised. You're relying on, did the person who decided there was probable cause in this case rely on the slanderous nature of the statements, or was it on the kerfuffle that occurred when they tried to escort her out of the room?
I believe Easterday relied mainly on the kerfuffle, but what I'm pointing out is what Judge Maloney did. The evidence
that was presented to Easterday that caused the change in mind to issue provision that she did was the disturbance that occurred when the police were trying to get her out to leave, right?
Yeah, that would be correct. And looking at that, there was a
instead of focusing on what she said, you get into all these First Amendment problems when you talk about what she said. She said stuff which caused the presider to eject her from the room. She left and she came back. Still doesn't seem to be a breach of the peace until she refuses to leave when the police try to escort her out. Then she makes some noises, allegedly, but all we're talking about is probable cause.
Correct. When she comes back,
how does that fit under the Open Meetings Act? I mean, is she allowed, are they allowed to eject her?
Well, we keep going back to that topic. I believe I've stated basis that there were allowed to eject her. But even still, she comes back into the meeting, that causes a disturbance. And then on top of it, she starts to engage in conversation as the meeting's in progress, as someone else is at the podium. And then ultimately the officers have to come and stop that aspect and ask her to leave. And then the kerfuffle then escalates. And the opposing counsel cites to People versus O'Keefe stating that that can't be a disturbance because it was created by the police. But I don't believe that's really what People versus O'Keefe was getting at. In People v. O'Keefe, the only person disturbed was the officer. It doesn't take into account anybody else. So in O'Keefe, it's just the officer saying, I was disturbed by what's going on. In this case, we have eight separate witnesses.
In this case, until the officers approached her, wasn't the only person disturbed the presiding officer? Because she didn't come into the meeting keeping up noise, did she? She came in, sat down, and spoke quietly to this Judge Hawley. Isn't that correct?
No, I don't believe that she spoke quietly because she disturbed the individuals next to the judge, who was Alania Adair, and she provided a statement. And there was also the other officers who witnesses. Linda Morrison was another witness, Shauna Allen. The prosecutor had several statements from several different witnesses, all identifying Ms. Smith as the cause of the disturbance. That, with the video, okay. And yesterday came together.
What did those individuals, though, say was the disturbance? They were disturbed when she whispered to the judge?
I don't have their statements right in front of me, but their statements were provided to Easterday, who in her own independent judgment said there's probable cause. And going further on, many other people looked at the same evidence on the state level and found probable cause. There was a magistrate who signed off on it.
Mr. Baber, wait. I'm actually drawing a sort of a demarcation between two instances of conduct. One was the walking back in the room, the sitting down and talking to the judge. Is that what these individuals were saying disturbed them? And is that what disturbed the mayor? Or was it after the officers approached her when she then made loud outbursts?
Well, what I can tell you is that Judge Hallisey stated he was disturbed when she came in and started talking. Okay, so he's one who's disturbed. The person next to him also stated that she noticed Ms. Smith walk back into the chambers and speak to the judge. That was Alania Adair. So those are two independent witnesses, not officers, who witnessed the disturbance before the officers then approached. So to say that no one was disturbed by this small conversation, well, Judge Hallisey was disturbed. He's there lawfully watching a meeting in peace, and he's disturbed. And then the individual next to him. So there was a disturbance. Now, understand, this is not a situation where someone comes in, making a loud ruckus, but a loud ruckus isn't necessarily what's required for a disturbance. It doesn't have to be, okay, and there's no case law that states that.
But if we take your example, let's look at people sitting in the chamber, a person coming in to take a seat who needs to cross over somebody who's seated. That could be a disturbance. That's not the kind of thing that would be probable cause for anything, is it? I mean, it causes the person whom you're crossing over to momentarily have their attention potentially disrupted. And it sounds like talking to the judge is almost on that order.
Well, maybe not beyond a reasonable doubt standard, but probable cause is much less. And it's not just the judge, as I said, it's the surrounding individuals. And this isn't someone who's just peacefully coming into a room.
You only have 30 seconds, and I must say that the argument that the disturbance came from slipping in and whispering to the judge, and I watched the video as well, is pretty weak. But you have another argument, which I'm wondering if you could make in 14 seconds. Respect to
unfortunately,
way,
I had
some way that the way that more people were more obviously disturbed and which caused a halt in the proceedings was her response to the efforts by the police to have her leave. All right, so the police are, and that doesn't come off the parts of the video that I saw. It was very hard to hear what was going on, but there were statements submitted by people who were there that said, this stopped things. This interrupted my ability to watch what was going on, and what was going on was stopped. Now, you seem to be not willing to have probable cause rely on that, which makes me wonder whether the argument that that's a breach of a peace is weak, since you're arguing this other stuff, which is really weak, rather than your what apparently is stronger argument that something that really does sort of get at breach of the or disturbance of a meeting. Is that because the police started it? Is that the reason you're reluctant to argue that?
No, Judge, it's not. It's really just a timing issue in trying to go through what I had preordained in my mind. I will rest upon what's been written in my briefs and in my motions for sanctions, but the video does show a disturbance. The meeting didn't continue on. This wasn't just a peaceful entry into the room. When the officers did approach, she did say, don't touch me. She did fight with the officers and resisted them to leave. And that's all on video. And the meeting stopped. The person who was at the podium speaking, not the appellant, had to stop. And then the meeting had to restart. All this was evidence that was provided to the prosecutor. The judge had it in the state case, made it an estoppel argument, which I wish I had time to make, but it's in my brief. There's multiple reasons why there was probable cause.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Judge Rogers, did he answer your question?
I think within the time he could, yes.
Well, I mean, if there's, obviously we have the magical power to extend, but are you okay with what's been said thus far in the brief? All right, Judge Bush, did you have another question?
Yeah, just to be clear about what Mr. Baber is arguing. Suppose Ms. Smith had just come back into the courtroom and done nothing. And then the police arrested her. Nothing else happened. Do you think the police would have had probable cause in that instance?
I argued that, and I still believe that that is the case, because when she disrupted the meeting during her statements, gave slander under Leonard versus Robinson, that's probable cause right there of a disturbance of a public meeting. And they could have arrested her based on that, if we look at that standard. So I do believe that had she just returned based upon what took place before, there's case precedent in the Sixth Circuit that says the officers could have arrested her for violation.
I think Leonard v. Robinson is a Michigan case.
Correct, it is.
Okay, and what happened in that case?
Ultimately, it was... if you give me a second, I do have notes in regards to the overview of that case.
Well, if you have to look, I can look myself and find it. I just wanted to try to crystallize whether the facts of Leonard v. Robinson are really that close to what we have.
Well, yes, it is. The individual in Leonard v. Robinson went to a meeting, argued with council members, and used some profanity, was ruled out of order. And ultimately, the judge said, we find let's see, we hold that no reasonable officer would find that probable cause exists arrest a speaker at a chair public assembly based solely on the content unless and until that speaker is deemed to be out of order. So when that speaker is just stating the content alone, there's no probable cause. But as soon as that speaker is deemed out of order, Leonard V. Robinson says at that point, there's probable cause.
Was there probable cause in Leonard?
That's right.
There was? Sounded like there wasn't.
If there wasn't in Leonard, they cite to Jones v. Hammond, 888F.2D.
So it's dictum in Leonard.
Yeah, that would be correct. Okay. Sorry about that, Judge. You're correct.
Thank you. That's what I just wanted that clarification. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Certainly, Mr. Baber. Mr. Field, you have your rebuttal.
Very quickly, let's just focus on the Assistant Prosecuting Attorney, Angela Easterday. She testified under oath that the first statement was not a crime. The second statement was not a crime. Coming back into the room was not a crime. Talking to the judge was not a crime. She issued based on the confrontation initiated by the mayor through the police officers. And that, I submit to you, can't be a crime under People versus Ferguson. She just made that mistake. It really is that fifth one. The second point I want to make is very
brief. People versus Ferguson, is that what you said?
I believe that's the name of it.
That's not a case.
And in that case, that was where the officer initiated it, but also I believe Mr. Baber said that that case involved only the officer being disturbed, and he was distinguishing it on that ground.
I'm sorry, I meant to say People versus O'Keefe. I apologize. Right?
Oh, O'Keefe. All right. That's what okay. I
the,
Am I getting my case confused here? I'm trying to think, whatever the authority is that talks about if the officer initiates it, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir. The one that says where the only disturbance is created by law enforcement seeking to enforce the law. The second point I want to make is it's very important not to confuse disturbing an individual and disturbing the meeting. Your Honor, I think you address this. If you ask to cross over somebody or come and whisper to them in a court proceeding, you're disturbing them. I mean, you're distracting them, but that's not a disturbance of the meeting. To be criminal, you have to disturb the meeting, not one or two people that you're trying to talk to. I think that's an important point. It doesn't disturb the meeting to disturb a person. I mean, she intended to disturb him in the sense that she went up and tapped him on the shoulder and said, would you sign this form?
I think that's your strongest argument, and I think I understand that. But you're not saying you have to be violent in order to disturb a meeting.
No, you don't. You have to be violent to be guilty of breach of the peace. See, the ejection standard is different than the standards
of the meeting crime. Enough to have probable cause apart from.
I would say yes, and I'll tell you why I say that, Your Honor. The public policy of the state of Michigan guaranteeing citizens the right to be present at meetings wants to create a very high bar on presiders for just kicking people out because they feel like it. The defendant in this case, Dave Walters, kicked this lady out of the meeting because he didn't like her and he felt like it. And he had no legal right to do it. And the law is written to prevent that.
I understand. The question here isn't that law. The question is whether there's probable cause under the law involving disturbing.
Correct. Now we're down back to she's talking to Judge Halsey legally in the back of the courtroom, and the disturbance is created by the police.
He's declining to leave in a loud way, allegedly.
She's not. She goes right out of the room. She takes couldn't hire her to get out of the room faster. It said she was grabbed, and she said, don't touch.
The question isn't whether she did it or not. The question is whether there's probable cause, and there are these statements that people, not just Judge so-and-so, but people in other parts of the audience saying, I was disturbed and distracted by this response to the police escorting her out.
May I respond?
You may.
That didn't happen. There is no statement from anybody in the record that said that they were disturbed before the police approached her. None of these ghostly witnesses that Mr. Baber just talked about said that.
Mr. Field, my question is after the police approached her.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. They were disturbed. That was a disturbance.
But there's no violence. So is disturbance enough under the statute? The disturbance.
Well, there actually is violence. The police officer grabbed her.
Okay, but just assume hypothetically, Mr. Field, that's not violent. Then Judge Rogers' question is disturbance enough? Is disturbance of the peace enough?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
For the statute, for the
that's
criminal statute.
That's the statute we're concerned with. That's what she was indicted under. Or
yes.
Indictment, a charge.
As long as she initiated, not the police, it is enough. If she disturbs the peace without the police initiating it, yes.
Okay. Judge Rogers, is there anything further?
No, thank you.
Judge Bush, anything further?
No.
Thank you, counsel, for your argument. The matter is submitted. We'll give you a ruling in due course.